Hello and welcome to our Alaska Collaborative on Health and the Environment teleconference on flame retardant chemicals and public health, fire safety without harm, with guest presenter Arlene Bloom. We are also joined this morning by Alaska State Senator Bill Willikowski, who I'll be introducing shortly. My name is Diana DeFazio, and on behalf of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, I'll be facilitating today's call. CHE Alaska is a regional partnership group of the National Collaborative on Health and the Environment. CHE Alaska aims to advance knowledge and effective action to address growing concerns about the links between human health and environmental factors. You can find more information on the following websites, akaction.org and healthandenvironment.org. Everyone who signed up for the call should have received an email from me with a link to Arlene Bloom's presentation slides. If you don't have that link in front of you, you can access the PDF on our website, akaction.org. The call will last 1 hour with time at the end for your questions. And we are so pleased to welcome Senator Bill Willikowski to our CHE Alaska call this morning. Thank you for joining us, Senator.
Senator Willikowski. Hi, good to be here.
Thank you. Senator Willikowski represents Senate District H, serving Mountain View, Muldoon, and Russian Jack in Anchorage. He has been a great champion of education, healthcare, labor, active military personnel and veterans, and public health, all causes good and right. He sponsored a bill, the Safer Homes and Healthier Families Bill, SB 27, to phase out harmful flame retardants. That bill passed the full Senate in 2012. We thank him for his support of this important issue and look forward to working with him on possible legislation this session to protect the health of children, firefighters, and all Alaska residents. Welcome, Senator Willikowski.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You may go ahead and offer your words for as much time as you have this morning.
Okay, great. As you mentioned, back in 2012, I had introduced legislation. I think I had actually been introducing it for several years prior to that. And we finally got it passed out of the Senate in 2012. And it went to the House, and died in the House. One of the reasons I think that it died was because we had testimony from a doctor from Washington State who has since been stripped of his medical license, who came in and falsified some testimony. And I actually had people tell me they voted against my bill or didn't support the bill because of his testimony. So in 2012, that was a year that we had a big redistricting reelection. The Senate and the House, the Senate was realigned, and I was no longer in the majority. Senator Olson was, and he's a doctor. He actually pushed the bill at that time. It didn't go anywhere. I was approached again this year supporting this legislation. I've always felt it was a real critical piece of legislation. Our Constitution says that we're to provide for the safety of people in Alaska, and to me, this is one of the just most common sense critical pieces of legislation we can pass. So I've been working on updating the legislation and trying to get it in a form that won't cost very much money, if any money at all, won't be too onerous, but will start us along the process of banning PBDEs and other toxic flame retardants. When we worked on this bill a few years ago, we had pretty wide-ranging support from firefighters and just people who are concerned about kids and families. And I'm sure you all know about the big problems with PBDEs that exist out there. I think in Alaska, it's particularly problematic for a number of reasons. Number one, we've got Alaskans tend to spend more time indoors, and this increases exposure to an ingestion of the microscopic particles. When I talk to people about this, we actually had some studies done back in 2012, and we tested some of the furniture in the Capitol building here, and we found that some of the furniture that legislators were using on a daily basis contained pounds and pounds of toxic PBDEs. And so that's one of the problems that you have, particularly in Alaska, is we're indoors a lot of the time and more likely to be exposed to these things. The second problem that you have in Alaska is that Alaskans eat a greater quantity of subsistence foods that have higher concentrations of the bioaccumulating chemicals. And in fact, the toxic flame retardant retardants have been found in breast milk in Yupik women. And then the third issue is toxins like PBDEs are carried in the atmosphere through global distillation and tend to concentrate in global climates. So this is a real problem in Alaska, and you know, it every time a child crawls on the floor, there's a good chance they're being exposed to PBDEs. They're everywhere in your homes, in your furniture, in your carpets, in your microwaves, in your telephones. And so we're trying to take a step to have the legislature address that, like a number of other states done and the European Union has done. And we're working on the bill right now. We have it drafted. We've sent it off to the Department of Environmental Conservation for their comments and concerns. And we're really trying to get it in a shape where we think we might be able to get some support. When they came to me again this year, I suggested that they go to a majority member to introduce it. Unfortunately, they were not successful, but I'm happy to carry it and push hard for it, and hopefully we can have some common sense prevail in this building. I'll stop right there. I don't know how else you want to proceed if people have questions or anything, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Senator. My understanding is that you don't have time to stay. I mean, would you like? Do you have time for a question or two?
I've got till about 9:15, so I've got about 5 or 6 minutes.
Okay, well, let's go ahead. This isn't normally how we do the call, but I'd like to be flexible since you have the time, and we really appreciate your time this morning. And thank you for all that you're doing to support public health. If someone has a question for Senator Bill Wilikowski, go ahead and press *2 to unmute your line, please. State your name and affiliation if you would do that. That would be wonderful. And keep it brief so we can maybe get two questions in. If there are no questions, we'll go on. We have quite a wonderful presentation
Great.
Coming up. Oh, do we have somebody? No questions? All right. Well, again, Senator Bill Wilikowski, we really appreciate your time this morning.
And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for being a champion of this cause. All right. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Now it is my pleasure to welcome and introduce Arlene Bloom. Arlene Bloom is a biophysical chemist, author, mountaineer, and founder of the Green Science Policy Institute. Bloom holds a doctorate in biophysical chemistry and has taught at Stanford University, Wellesley College, and UC Berkeley, where her research was instrumental in banning two cancer-causing chemicals that were used as a flame retardant on children's sleepwear, as well as the pesticide DBCP. Arlene and her organization, the Green Science Policy Institute, spent the last 8 years campaigning for changes in California's flammability standards to eliminate harmful flame retardant chemicals from furniture and children's products. And the new flammability standards went into effect in January of this year, and that's part of what she'll be talking about today. Bloom is author of Annapurna, A Woman's Place, and Breaking Trail, A Climbing Life. Her awards include selection by the UK Guardian as one of the world's 100 most inspiring women and National Women's History Project selection as one of 100 women taking the lead to save our planet, selection as an American Association for the Advancement of Science Fellow, election to the Hall of Mountaineering Excellence, and recent selection as the recipient of the Thomas Lamb Elliott Award from Reed College, an annual award for lifetime achievement of a Reed graduate. Welcome, Arlene. You may go ahead and begin.
I'm delighted to be speaking with you and to follow Senator Wilikowski's eloquent talk. It's just great to hear legislators who understand the issues and can present them so clearly. So you've got a great sponsor for your bill, and I'm going to try to share some of the science that underlies it. And hopefully have some time for questions at the end, let's hope. So, I am at the Green Science Policy Institute, and our goal is to bring good science to decision makers like the senator to help them fashion sound policies in the public interest. But talking to you, I looked at the book Silent Snow, a wonderful book, The Slow Poisoning of the Arctic by Marla Cohn. And I just, you perhaps all know this, but I couldn't resist beginning with her quote, how could the Arctic, seemingly untouched by contemporary ills, be home to the most contaminated people on the planet, and that this is one of the greatest environmental injustices on the earth? And so that's one of the reasons that I know you are doing this important legislation. In the next slide, we know that birth defects are higher in Alaska, and that Alaskan Native infants have a very high risk of birth defects, and there appear to be relationships to pollution. So the problem in slide three is chemicals are not really regulated in our country before they go out into the world. There's a Clean Air Act, a Clean Water Act once they're out there, there are 62,000 chemicals that were grandfathered when TSCA passed, and even asbestos, which kills 10,000 people a year, cannot be regulated by the EPA. The EPA tried for several years and failed. You know, you might say, well, asbestos is regulated, we can't use it. It's regulated because workers who are exposed can get mesothelioma, a rare form of cancer that's almost always caused by asbestos. And they can sue and they can probably win their asbestos lawsuit, but they all die. And that is not a good way to regulate chemicals. Of the 20,000 new chemicals, the majority have no data. No data is required. So and these pollutants that are produced down in, you know, the states and in other regions are carried in slide five, they're carried by wind, waves, and rivers to the Arctic, and they end up in Arctic animals and Arctic people. So Herb Needleman and Phil Landrigan said, we are conducting a massive clinical toxicological trial, and our children and our children's children are the experimental subjects. And the sad thing is that when a chemical is banned, for example, the chemical decabrominate, so we're on slide seven. On the left, you see a structure for decabromodiphenyl ether. That's two phenyl rings, diphenyl, an ether bond, and oxygen with 10 bromines around it, which is persistent, bioaccumulative, and toxic. And after a huge amount of work by advocates in different states, it's indeed being phased out. But as the sales of the deca ether go down, the sales go up of the deca ethane. You look at the structure on the right. Two rings, 10 bromines, and an ethane bond rather than an ether bond. And this is possibly more persistent and bioaccumulative than the ether, and we're learning about the toxicity. So this makes it very difficult when you're regulating individual chemicals. So one solution in slide eight, which I'm just going to introduce, and it's a bit beyond the scope of this call, but I wanted to share it with you, is a group of us have come up with the concept of classes, regulating chemicals by classes. And these are scientists, NGOs, people from business and the academic world, have done a number of four-day retreats. And we came up with the six classes: fluorinated chemicals, antimicrobials, flame retardants. These all have a carbon bonded to a halogen. These are some of the strongest bonds in the periodic table. None of these sorts of chemicals are naturally found in any mammals, so our bodies don't know how to deal with them. They tend to go into our bodies and stay a long time. The other classes are the bisphenols and phthalates, some solvents, and metals. And if any of you are interested, slide nine, you can go to sixclasses.org, hear a 15-minute webinar in each of the six classes. Learn why they're harmful, where they're used, and why you really don't want to use them. And many retailers and manufacturers in this country have listened to these lectures, and some are beginning to phase out whole classes of chemicals. We believe that the purchasers of chemicals, which are big institutional purchasers, retailers, and manufacturers, when they're educated, can make decisions to remove whole classes of chemicals. You know, they have no benefit from having products that are toxic to their workers, their employees, or the public. So in our series, we have six lectures on the six classes. The seventh lecture is called, Is It Necessary? Are these chemicals necessary? If you say to a mom, well, you can have a stain-resistant carpet, but the chemical will be in your baby's body for the rest of their lives, what's that mom going to say? Is it worth it to have a stain-resistant carpet with the potential for a harmful chemical in her baby's body? And if it really is necessary and it's worth it, the third question is there a safer alternative? But first, just with is it necessary and is it worth it, we can really reduce the use of a lot of these harmful chemicals. And then in our series, the eighth lecture is on green chemistry. If it's necessary and it's worth it, then really invest in green chemistry for safer alternatives. So very quickly, I just thought I'd do a quick overview. We don't have a lot of time, but fluorinated chemicals, just like flame retardants, are found in very high levels in the polar regions, in animals, and in indigenous peoples. The carbon fluoride bond is perhaps the strongest bond in nature. And this results in good properties such as oil and water repellency, which are functions that are needed, and extreme resistance to breakdown in the environment. I asked some scientists, they said these chemicals don't break down for geologic time. That's millions of years. You choose to use these chemicals in a product, you're making a decision not for your great-grandchildren, but for probably as long as mankind exists. So it should be a decision made with some consideration. But in the next slide, we can see that you find these chemicals in microwave popcorn bags, food contact papers that are things that are stain repellent, water repellent, grease repellent, often have fluorochemicals. They're in certain cosmetics, outdoor equipment, furniture, carpets. And we have to say, is it worth it? Is it necessary? Again, they're found globally due to their mobility and long half-lives. There's a Stanford professor who always walks into his class the first day wearing a bright yellow tie. He says, see this tie, stain repellent, water repellent, but the chemicals in it are contributing to making the polar bear sterile. Is it worth it? And that is the question. There's an interesting book, Stain Repellent. We're on slide 15, stain-resistant, non-stick, waterproof, and lethal. That's the story of C8. When you have eight carbons with fluorines all around, this is C8, a very well-documented harmful class of chemicals. On the other hand, it's really not well-known. There's the good guide that says there's no harm from this class. And what is the harm? Slide 16. There's extensive human toxicology because these chemicals were inadvertently leaked into the water supplies in southern Ohio and West Virginia. Hundreds of thousands of people were exposed. There was a lawsuit. DuPont was lost and had to measure the levels in the inhabitants who were exposed and found this list of cancer and other diseases here. And so this is based on human epidemiology of the C8, eight carbons with fluorines. So C8 is being phased out in 2015. Yay. Apparently, DuPont toxicologists wrote about the fact humans shouldn't be exposed in the 1960s, but it is being phased out. One molecule called C8, one type, and it's being replaced with 30 forms of molecules called C6. C6 also will not break down for geologic times, and it's in groundwater, wastewater, and seawater. There is not much toxicology yet, certainly not around all 30 forms. Nobody even knows what they are. It is increasing in human blood, and it has been found to cause some cell changes associated with tumors. So this is the regrettable substitution. We've gone from one C8 to 30 C6s. We really have to think about the whole class, whether we want it in our products. A group of us scientists came together at the dioxin meeting in Madrid and put together the Madrid statement documenting the scientific consensus regarding the class and a roadmap to gather needed information. It's going to be published in the May issue of Environmental Health Perspectives. And you can, if anyone still wants to sign the Madrid Statement, you can find it on our website, greensciencepolicy.org. For those of you who are interested, there's a meeting in Colorado, the Fluoros 2015 and slide 19, and we'll be doing a day of science and policy that you'd be very welcome to attend. Class 2 is antimicrobials, triclosan and triclocarban. They are getting well known to be harmful. The FDA is finally taking a stand. They're found in all the products in slide 21. Again, it's not clear that they are helpful. Do we need them? Slide 22. If you have gum disease, they might be good in your toothpaste, but the whole country does not need it in their toothpaste. And there is no proven benefit over soap and water. They don't really help being in flooring and plastic. So there's really no evidence they reduce infections. We don't need them, and hopefully they're being phased out. Okay, here we are, flame retardants. That's what we've all been waiting for. And the problem around flame retardants is really flammability standards that drive their use. If there's a standard, people need to use flame retardants. And when the standards were set in the 70s, people thought they were a good thing, that they prevented fires and that there were no problems. In reality, standards were set in the 70s for children's sleepwear, for furniture, and foam plastic insulation. And in many cases, the chemicals used to meet the standards have been found to be harmful. And in some cases, they've been found to have no significant fire safety benefit. And you can change the flammability standard to actually increase fire safety without the need for flame retardants, which might seem like magic, but I'm going to explain. We first learned about the problem with flame retardants in the 70s, where a flame retardant called polybrominated biphenyl, that's slide 24, two phenyl rings with a covalent bond, was inadvertently mixed with livestock feed, and millions of animals had to be destroyed. But people, meanwhile, had drunk the milk, eaten the eggs, and these people and their children, this goes on for generations, appear to have a series of health problems that are in the slide. There's a great book called The Poisoning of Michigan that documents this. So this was back in 73. About that time, I was a postdoc at Stanford, and a friend of mine died climbing, who was an early environmentalist. I wanted to do something for the environment. And in slide 25, I learned about brominated tris flame retardant. And in those days, it was up to 10% of the weight of the fabric in most children's sleepwear. We found a child who'd never worn tris in her sleepwear and put her in tris-treated pajamas. We found tris breakdown products in her urine the next morning. And we did a screening to see if tris changed DNA. Was it a mutagen? And it was one of the strongest mutagens that we had ever observed. So being scientists, we wrote a paper, a lead article in Science, way back in 1977. We're slide 26 now. Flame retardant additives as possible cancer hazards. And the subtitle says a lot about what our does. It says the main flame retardant in children's pajamas is a mutagen and should not be used. And for those of you who read scientific papers, you know most papers always end with the same recommendation. More study is needed. We had done a couple of experiments, putting a little girl in tris pajamas, collecting her urine, also looking at the ability of tris to change DNA. And just based on that, we made this really strong recommendation that flame retardants, tris should not be used in children's pajamas. And slide 27, a few months later, the Consumer Product Safety Commission banned brominated tris from children's garments. However, here comes the regrettable substitution. Brominated tris is banned. It's replaced by chlorinated tris. And we did another more studies, wrote another paper in Science. It was a mutagen. Chlorinated tris was removed from pajamas a year later, but we didn't know that it was being used in furniture, that it was 5% of the weight of the foam in a lot of furniture. And the reason for that, slide 28, is Technical Bulletin 117. And this is a California furniture flammability standard that requires furniture foam to withstand a small open flame for 12 seconds. Well, if you think about it, you drop a candle on your couch, do a thought experiment. What burns first? The fabric. And when the fabric burns, you have a large flame. And so by the time the flame hits the foam, it's a large flame. The foam burns in a couple of seconds. And when foam burns in the presence of flame retardants, you get a lot more soot, smoke, and toxic gases, which is what kills people in fires. So the overall benefit of making the foam in your furniture 5% by weight flame retardant is really no significant benefit. Maybe a 2-second delay in ignition, but a lot more soot, smoke, and toxic gases. And I should just say regarding Tris, that I noticed that 3 forms of Tris are being banned from children's products in your bill, which is, I think, great. You know, that after it was removed from kids' pajamas in the 70s, it's time for it not to be used in other products. But if there's a requirement, then people have to, and there used to be a requirement in juvenile products for a long time. So the flame retardant inside 29 that was used in furniture foam and children's products from 1975 to 2004 to meet the California Furniture Flammability Standard is called PENTA-BDE, PBDE. And my little chemistry lesson is, if you look at the figure on the left on the top, 2 phenyl rings with a covalent bond, that's a PBB. Remember, that's what poisoned the cows in Michigan, or a PCB if it's chlorine. Toxic, persistent. If instead of having that covalent bond, you see in the next figure, there's an oxygen between the 2 rings, that is a polybrominated diphenyl ether. That's an ether bond. That's what's used in furniture and baby products. And if you oxidize or burn, you get the bottom 2, which are dioxins and furans. Highly toxic, highly persistent. So the PBDE is halfway in structure between a PCB and a dioxin. It was used from 1975 until it was phased out in 2004. 98% of the usage was in North America, and yet it has become a serious global pollutant. What are the health effects? In slide 30, you can see their chronic, their long-term impacts: endocrine disruption, neurodevelopmental and reproductive harm, immune suppression, and cancer. These are animal studies, but in the next slide, you can see in humans, if a woman has high levels of PBDEs, it takes her longer to get pregnant, and her thyroid hormones are altered during critical windows of brain development of the fetus, such that her child will have lower birth weight, impaired attention, poorer coordination, and lowered IQ. There's an estimate that the average California child has 4 to 5 less IQ points because of the PBDEs that were in their mother's body, and that's probably, sadly enough, also true of the average Alaskan child. Slide 32 shows how the products, the chemicals, end up in us. If they're in your couch, they're called semi-volatile. They're continually coming out from in the couch, which has a high density of the flame retardants into air, and they're heavy. They drop into dust. You get some dust in your hand. You eat a sandwich. They're inside you. A child crawls in the dust, puts them in their mouth. Cats have 10 to 100 times higher levels than people because of their grooming behavior. They lick the dust off their fur. Toddlers, sadly enough, have 3 to 5 times the level of flame retardants that their mothers do, because they get the mother's level through the placenta, more from breast milk, and finally from dust. The chemicals are global pollutants. Remember, 98% was in North America, but slide 33, you find them in polar bears, Tasmanian devils, top of the food chain predators. The highest levels in the world are in marine mammals off North America. So slide 34, was there a fire safety benefit from PB117? And the answer is foam meeting TB117 compared to a couch with foam. The does not contain added flame retardants, there's no significant consistent fire safety difference. There is no benefit. So knowing that, we decided in California to have legislation for increased fire safety without flame retardants. We had four bills, Assembly Bills 706 and Senate Bills 772, 1291, and 147. And they were supported by firefighters. Just as Senator Wycoski said, we had a broad range of support from parents, scientists, firefighters, and juvenile product manufacturers, furniture manufacturers, foam manufacturers, fabric manufacturers. Everyone supported these bills, but they failed. And why did they fail? They were opposed by Californians for Fire Safety. These are Albemarle, Chemtura, Israel Chemicals Limited. They are the three companies that manufacture flame retardants. And they're also the companies that paid the burn doctor that testified at your hearings that the senator referred to. And in fact, that burn doctor spoke about a baby in a fire in Alaska that had died because there were not flame retardants in the baby's crib. But the baby didn't exist. And the doctor was paid $240,000 for his testimony. And this was going on and on over 6 years at hearings in California for these bills until finally the Chicago Tribune inside 37 did this brilliant investigative series called Playing for Fire. And you can Google Playing with Fire and read the series. It's remarkable. You'll see a picture of the burn doctor. And the subtitle says it all. A deceptive campaign by industry brought toxic flame retardants into our homes and into our bodies, and the chemicals don't even work as promised. And this series came in second for the Pulitzer Prize and won a whole series of other important journalism prizes. Additionally, a documentary was made called Toxic Hot Seat. It's an hour and a half documentary by Jamie Redford and Kirby Walker, documenting the story. You can see it for a couple of dollars online if you Google Toxic Hot Seat, or the link is in this slide. I recommend it if you haven't seen it. So the video meant that, and I forgot to say, the reason those bills didn't pass is that the chemical industry spent a documented $23 million in California opposing the bills. And as much as $6 million in a one-week publicity blitz when it looked like one of the bills would pass. But all the publicity about flame retardants enabled Governor Brown inside 39 to issue a press release directing the Bureau in charge of the standard to find better ways to meet fire safety standards by reducing and eliminating dangerous chemicals. And that's what happened. Slide 40. We now have a new flammability standard called TB117-2013 that stops fire in the fabric. It stops the fire in the fabric so it never reaches the foam. So you don't have a fire. You have increased fire safety. And it stops it in the fabric without the use of flame retardants. Many fabrics like leather and heavy synthetics are naturally resistant to smoldering cigarettes, which are the major cause of fires. So it stops smoldering cigarette fires in the fabric. And some, like cotton, are not resistant, and a thin barrier fabric is put between the cotton and the foam. So the standard was implemented over a year ago. It became mandatory on January 1st. It does not ban flame retardants, but they're not needed. And the good news is that the foam industry in the U.S. is removing flame retardants from nearly all the foam they're making. It used to be foam would have flame retardants. You had to special order it without. Now most foam does not contain flame retardants, and you have to special order it with. Additionally, all these juvenile products are now exempt from flame retardants. On the other hand, there still could be flame retardants, and I think your legislation is extremely useful in making sure that flame retardants are not used in these juvenile products. So I think it works hand to hand, changing the standard as we've done in California. You know, We started working on this in 2006. It has been a really long and challenging process. It's 9 years later, and my friends have been all waiting to buy new couches, you know, and I'm like, don't buy it yet, wait. And so finally, in the next few months, the major brands are, they're still selling off their old furniture with flame retardants, but within a few months, look for the label that says TB117-2013. And there's also a labeling requirement. If you look at slide 42, Senate Bill 1019, which was effective in January, that says products made after January 1st need to have a label saying whether or not it contains added flame retardants. That's for furniture. For juvenile products, there is going to be a bill requiring labeling. But I think your bill is really helpful. Also, you have in your bill some really important flame retardants that are highly used, harmful, and really need to be singled out, such as tetrabromyl bisphenol A and chlorinated paraffins. So the good news in slide 43 is fires that start in furniture are decreasing. Fires are decreasing overall. Fire deaths are decreasing, and this is a really good thing. And the reasons in slide 44 are all fire safety tools that do not involve harm. There's been a big decrease in smoking. We have fire-safe cigarettes, candles, and lighters. People are using smoke detectors and alarms. 75% of fire fatalities are in homes without working smoke detectors. New construction has sprinklers. All the things in white on this slide are fire safety tools that are reducing fires and fire deaths. And smolder standards, like the new standard TB117-2013 that stops fires in the fabric, stops smoldering cigarette fires in the fabric so it doesn't reach the foam. All these things are working. In green, we have open flame standards. That's where you put an open flame up against a piece of furniture. And the way you usually meet that is with flame retardants. Yet there's still a big push for more open flame standards in the United States. And you have to wonder where that push is coming from. All the manufacturers, scientists, everyone is so grateful to have increased fire safety without flame retardants. But yet, some people would still like an open flame standard and perhaps flame retardants. So what can you do right now in slide 45? Consider replacing the foam in your furniture. Foam shops are increasingly having flame retardant-free foam, so you can swap out the foam in your furniture. We have a foam exchange down here in the San Francisco Bay Area. You can read more about it on our website. Buy furniture with a new label that says TB117-2013 and ask for products without flame retardants. If you have flame retardants in your home, you can reduce your exposure by frequently vacuuming, wet mopping, and hand washing. There's studies showing levels on hands can be related to levels in bodies. I'm just going to say a little bit now about a new effort that we're working on around foam plastic insulation in buildings. So the materials that make buildings energy efficient, foam plastic insulations, that's polystyrene, EPX, and XPS, polyurethane, polyisocyanurate, they unfortunately all contain flame retardants that are harmful. HBCD and TCPP, which is on your list. But many of the places where they're used, there's not a fire safety benefit. So, for example, between the slab and the soil, there's no oxygen, no source of ignition, no fire. And the flame retardants can just leach out into soil and water. We don't need them. Most walls have a 15-minute flashover requirement. So before the fire can reach the insulation, the room has to flash over for 15 minutes. At that point, a small level of flame retardant in the walls does not do anything to prevent fires. So in countries like Sweden, they do not require flame retardants in furniture, in insulation, and they have not seen any increase in fires. So slide 47, a bill in California, AB 127, did pass in 2013, requiring our state fire marshal to look into updates to maintain fire safety but allow flexibility in meeting the standards with or without flame retardants. And we are awaiting her recommendation to the California Building Standards Commission. For a long time, she had said that insulation below grade may be used without flame retardants. That's between the slab and the soil. But unfortunately, the committee, the advisory committee for this was primarily composed of industry people who had time. It was an open committee. Anyone could join, a big time commitment. And the industry people, believe it's important to have flame retardants below grade. And we just don't know what our fire marshal is going to recommend. A group of people are working on changing the international building code to allow foam plastic insulation without flame retardants in slide 48. The proponents include many architecture firms, the U.S. Green Building Council on slide 49, Kaiser Permanente. And so we are seeking support. If this interests any of you, there are hearings in Tennessee and Long Beach. Avery at greensciencepolicy.org is in charge of this. This is on slide 50. So please contact us if you'd like to help. We're also having a meeting in Beijing on April 21st before the annual symposium on flame retardants. Again, if you're going to Beijing, please contact me, Arlene at Green Science Policy. We'd like to invite you to the meeting. And then very quickly, the fourth class of the, remember, six classes, flame retardants are number three. Going on to four, there's bisphenols, which are used in plastics and cash register receipts, phthalates. And again, bisphenol A has been phased out, but the common substitute, bisphenol S, might be more harmful. So you want to try getting away from the whole class. Do we need them? Slide 54, we're talking about solvents, hydrocarbon solvents used in dry cleaning. They're petroleum-based. They're aromatic solvents like toluene, xylene, and benzene, chlorinated solvents, oxygenated solvents. And in the next slide, again, do we need them? Let's use green chemistry to improve efficiency, so let's use less. Maybe we can cut the amount by half or switch to water-based products or other safer alternatives. Lastly, the sixth class is certain metals, arsenic, cadmium, chromium, lead, mercury, and so forth. You know there are problems in the Arctic. They can be toxic at extremely low doses. Do we need them? Do we need arsenic and chromium in our play structures? No. This is slide 57. Do we need mercury in our mascara? No. Do we need lead in our rubber duckies? No. However, we do need metals in our cell phones and a lot of electrical equipment. So that's the question, though. But if we get rid of them where we don't need them, there can be a considerable reduction. So just to say, we think the class approach minimizes regrettable substitutions in slide 58. It's a relatively simple tool for decision makers. It makes better choices possible for manufacturers, retailers, and large purchasers. And we think it's effective at reducing harmful chemicals in products. If any of you are really interested in the class approach, you can join our e-list. We send out messages once a month about flame retardants and other harmful chemicals, www.greensciencepolicy.org, or you can write me, Arlene, at greensciencepolicy.org. We're having another retreat on the six classes. Someone from Alaska would be great to have you join us. We want to thank our funders in slide 60, especially the New York Community Trust, the people who've attended the retreats, our team, and just end by saying that by reducing the use of six classes of chemicals and particularly flame retardants, as you're doing in your bill, we can have a healthier world. So thank you very much.
Wow, Arlene, thank you. I know you moved through some parts of that a little bit quicker, and hopefully by leaving time for questions, we can touch on some of those things as we move along. We have one more speaker. I'd like to invite Pam Miller, founder and director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, to say a few words about ACAT's work and how you can get involved, and then we'll move to an open question period. So we hope all of you will stay with us for that. And thank you again, Arlene. So Pam, you may go ahead and begin.
Thank you, Diana, and good morning all. And first of all, I'd like to give a great big thank you to Arlene for sharing your expertise and for all of your great work as a scientist and just as a great human being. We so appreciate all that you've done. And also, I'd like to give a big thank you also to Senator Wilikowski for his work on this important issue in Juneau. And as was mentioned early in the call by Senator Wilikowski, we are advocating for the introduction and passage of important legislation, a new and improved version of the Toxic Free Children's Act, and this will prevent the manufacture, sale, and distribution of 10 toxic and really unnecessary flame retardant chemicals that are used widely in children's products and also in home furniture. It will also require the labeling of children's products because we know right now that things that we buy are not often labeled as to whether they have flame retardants or not. And this would include upholstered furniture as well as children's products. And this will inform people, again, about whether these products contain toxic flame retardant chemicals. And as Arlene so eloquently spoke about, really, these chemicals are used widely in children's products, carpeting, and home furniture. And Senator Wilikowski mentioned some of the reasons that Alaskans should care about this because we are spending more time indoors. We most likely have higher exposures, and we are on the receiving end for these chemicals that are carried on wind and ocean currents into the Arctic. And people in Alaska rely on traditional foods and have higher exposures. In fact, we know that some studies have shown that women of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, for example, have the highest levels of certain flame retardant chemicals in their blood. So there are plenty of reasons for Alaskans to care about this issue. It's a critical children's health issue. It's a critical public health issue. And we really invite your support and engagement and would ask you to contact our office if you're interested in getting involved. We have information on our website. We have some great fact sheets. We're also sponsoring an event in Juneau later this month with a firefighter from California, Tony Stefani, who's featured in the film that Arlene spoke about, Toxic Hot Seat. And he founded an organization to help firefighters who have cancers and other diseases because of their occupational exposures to these and other chemicals on the job. And these events are going to be in Juneau from March 24th through 27th. So I think I'll stop there. Our bill is really focused on flame retardants that are in the process of being phased out, but also others that are in current and widespread use. So we really just invite you to join us, join our efforts to get this bill introduced and passed. We need all of you to make this happen. So please call our office at 222-7714. Mari Carmen is our civic engagement coordinator and is working very closely on this policy effort. So please do contact us. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Pam. So now this is the time during our call when we invite questions and comments from participants. So if you'd like to ask a question, please press *2 to unmute your line. And please also state your name and affiliation. You can ask questions of Pam regarding the local effort in Alaska or of Arlene Bloom, anything that came up during the presentation that you'd like to learn more about. There's something I would like you to touch on, Arlene, if you could. Oh, we have somebody. I'll come back to my question.
Okay. This is Kathy Blaustein calling from Oregon State University in Corvallis, Oregon. I'd like to thank you for today's program. Diane, if you were the one that put it together, it's the best of many, many great programs that I've attended online or, via the phone. And also to thank Dr. Bloom and Pam and Senator Wilikowski for their valuable input. So my question is, listening, I work in the area of human health risk assessment and pesticides. So this whole idea of regulating things by classes is very familiar to me. And I was also thinking about existing exposures to a lot of these toxic chemicals in our homes. And it almost reminds me of the problems with lead remediation in old buildings and all of in all of the paints and things that are existing. And it's a huge problem to try to clean things up and make them safe. And so I was just wondering what kinds of things can people do who live in older homes that perhaps really contain a lot of these toxic materials in the walls and insulation and all of that kind of stuff. Can you comment on that in any way? And I will mute my line. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your excellent question. And I should just say that we came up with the six classes. We did not include foods, drugs, or pesticides because those are regulated, maybe not as well as they should be, but they are. So we came up with the six classes of chemicals where they're only regulated by TSCA, which means not regulated well at all. And, we think the first thing really is to get them out of our products, like to turn off the tap, because it's like with furniture. If your old couch and your new couch have flame retardants, there's not much you can do. I mean, what you can do, of course, is the things, as you said, like for lead remediation, which is reducing dust. So as I said quite briefly, in terms of remediation, you want as little dust as possible inside your body. There's studies showing levels of flame retardants on toddlers' hands relate to the levels in their bodies, similarly with adults' hands. So hand washing is important. Vacuuming with a HEPA filter, wet mopping. And this is, when it's in your home. But if you can turn off the tap, so to speak, as I think we are finally doing in California, and to say the California standard is followed across the country. So by turning off the tap in California, the whole country, the furniture supply in the United States, Canada, and Alaska, all of us is going to be having decreased number of flame retardants and an opportunity to make choices. Now, I know everyone can't buy a new couch, so you can swap out the foam in your couch for foam without flame retardants. And again, on our website, we have some suggestions for a foam exchange. And we think for chemicals like the fluorinated chemicals, they're used in nearly all outdoor gear. And I know we're working with outdoor companies to say, well, if you're climbing Mount Everest, do you really need that ultimate jacket with fluorinated chemicals? But do you need it in your surf shorts and when you go to the beach? And so I think, recognizing what are the really most harmful chemicals, and then, whoever we are, consumers can say, I want my outdoor clothing without fluorinated chemicals. And so can retailers, manufacturers, and big purchasers. So maybe a long answer to your question.
Thank you, Kathy, for your question. And thank you, Arlene. Is there someone else who would like to ask a question? Just press *2 to unmute your line. Well, the question that I had was about, you were recently quoted in an article called Hand-Me-Down Hazards that was in Environmental Health Perspectives. And I'm wondering what you suggest people do with their old furniture if they are upgrading to the ones with the TB117-2013 label.
Well, that is a huge problem that we have been worried about. So I could just say that for 8 years, when I've talked to people in Congress, the whole 8 years I've been working on this, and people at the EPA, I've said, someday we're going to turn the tap off on toxic flame retardants, and we need to have a solution for those old couches. Because right now, if you give them to the Goodwill, they're likely to end up in college dormitories, college students, low-income communities. And the furniture industry estimates furniture has two or three owners of 10 to 15 years each, which means the people who really should not be exposed are going to be exposed for a long time to come. The other thing is landfilling them, and that's probably better, but they still are known to leach out. And then the foam right now is often chopped up into carpet cushion, which is not what you want for the toxic flame retardants to go from your couch to your carpet. So we have come up with the foam exchange where people, instead of throwing away their couch, they at least swap the foam out and get safe foam. So that means they have, and just to say, polyurethane, which is in the cushions, has flame retardants, but mostly the sides and backs of couches have polyester, which is more compressible, and it does not contain flame retardants. So if you swap out your cushions, you'll be getting rid of sometimes all the flame retardants or at least a big chunk of them. So we think if people swap out their foam, then they get a safe couch. And when they pass their couch on to low-income communities or student housing, their couch does not contain flame retardants. There's still an issue of what do you do with the foam with flame retardants. And we actually have a grant from the National Science Foundation. We're going to be having a meeting to bring science together to talk about new technologies. Could the foam be melted down and the flame retardants extracted and new foam remade? So again, if someone's interested, we will be having a meeting in November in Washington, D.C. On new technologies for the disposal of foam and plastic mixed with flame retardants, which is a huge problem. I don't know the answer, but I think swapping out your cushions it's partial. You know, when you think about what to do with tens of millions of toxic couches, it's just overwhelming. But at least if it's just the foam that's toxic, it's a bit more manageable. So I wish I had a better answer, but that's as far as we are now.
Thank you. And I think we have time for one more, and then I'll do my closing remarks. So I believe there might be another question out there.
Yeah,
I have a question.
This is Fran.
Do you know any manufacturers of outdoor clothing that are not using flame retardants that we could, you know, use as a source?
No, flame retardants are not in outdoor clothing. I'm sorry if I was confusing. It's fluorinated stain repellents.
Okay,
flame retardants are intense, and the outdoor industry would really like to not have to use them. But it's fluorinated. It's those fluorinated chemicals that are in outdoor clothing. And some manufacturers, particularly Swedish and European ones, are phasing them out. And I think encouraging others to do so is a good thing to do.
Or was
someone else speaking at the same time?
Trying to ask a question at the same time, but let's keep it really brief because we are just about out of time.
Okay, Fran Solomon from the Evergreen State College, Tacoma. Just point of clarification, is a TB-117 2013, is that currently applicable all over the United States?
I didn't quite hear. Did you say, is that applicable?
So is it in effect in all 50 states?
Well, no. So it's only a California standard. However, the whole country follows it because basically manufacturers make one kind of furniture.
They're
not required to, but they only make one kind. So back when California, you needed flame retardants to meet California standard, the whole country pretty much put flame retardants in. And so now the whole country is pretty much taking them out. If you go home and look at your couch, very high probability that they'll be under the center cushion. It'll say that it meets California TB-117. And the new couches in Alaska or Oregon or right near Evergreen State, you'll find that the old ones will say meets TB-117. The new ones are going to say TB-117 2013. And if it was manufactured since January 1st, there'll be a label that says whether or not they contain flame retardants. So it's California, but it's de facto for all of North America.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and I'm sorry that we are out of time, as I know that there may be some more questions lingering. You can go ahead and send those questions to me if you'd like, and I'll do my best to try to find some answers for you. My email is diana@akaction.org. I also really encourage you to go on to Arlene's website for the Green Science Policy Institute, where there are a host of resources. Our next call will be Wednesday, April 8th, and we'll be on a new resource guide on endocrine disrupting chemicals, or EDCs, developed by the Endocrine Society and the International POPs Elimination Network. The guide was developed to raise global awareness about EDCs, and our guest will be Andrea Gore, lead author of the guide and professor of pharmacy and toxicology at the University of Texas, Austin, and Bjorn Bieler, international coordinator for the International POPs Elimination Network, or IPEN. So we hope you'll be able to join us for that, and we'll have information and a sign-up form on our website sometime next week. So in closing, I'd like to remind you that a recording of today's call will be available on our website. And again, if you have additional questions or comments, you can contact the ACAT office at 907-222-7714. You can email me, Diana, at akaction.org. And I just want to thank everyone again for joining us today for a wonderful call. So have a great day, and thank you.